You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Oil Spills Podcast. I'm host Craig Ellingson. We're talking today on Tuesday, November 26th, the day before the Oilers play in Denver against the Colorado Avalanche to end their five-game road trip. And I'm with Hockey Hall of Fame writer Jim Matheson. And Maddie, you were on the first three games of that trip through the Las Vegas game. But right now, even if they lose tomorrow in Denver, they would have a 3-2 record. Coming out of a tough five-game swing through mostly your division rivals, with and the outlier being a loss to the surprising loss to the LA Kings, a team they probably should have beaten. However, this is sports, this is hockey. Any given day, any team can beat another team, whether you're on the top of the league or in the bottom.
Well, in the past years, the Oilers would also lose to teams like LA and Minnesota early in the year, and Chicago and Detroit, but they weren't beating a good team, so they couldn't beat too many teams, as a matter of fact. But now we're bemoaning the fact that they lose to teams that are down on the standings. And how could they do that? Well, they're still winning more games against better teams than they did before. So if you're going to lose games, I think it's their mind wanders. They play indifferently against the weaker teams, because they don't perceive themselves a weaker team now. And that happens to all sorts of stronger teams. When you do lose, I know Washington has, if not the best home record in the league, one of them, and then, Arizona went in there and beat them. And so you say, how did that happen? Well, it happens because, Washington doesn't perceive Arizona as being that good, and you lose the game. So I think the key to the Oilers is they played a lot of road games already. They've already played 16 road games, more road games than home games, and they're 9-5-2 on the road. So they're getting those road games out of the way, and there's going to be a stretch where they're at home a heck of a lot more than they're on the road. As long as they continue to play well at home, which they have, they'll be fine. I just don't see this year's team falling into, they lost five in a row. Now, they could if they get some injuries. Like last year when Klefbom got hurt and then Russell got hurt about the same time. So suddenly they're down two defensemen. And I guess if, knock on wood, if Draisaitl or McDavid ever got hurt for, an extended period of time, whether that's 3-4 weeks or something, then that would be a problem. But as long as they keep playing and there's no major injuries, they just keep rolling along.
Yeah, you're talking about the Klefbom injury from last year and the Russell injury, which, forced Shirley's hand to try to make some trades to address that. But obviously this year, that's not the case. There is depth. We have Ethan Bear and Caleb Jones up on the NHL roster right now. I mean, Jones did come up last year. But, the play of Ethan Bear is, that's one of the surprises of this season. Here Bear is, and I don't even know what the Calder conversation is, but clearly he would have to be among the top three finalists if we were to name them right now.
McCarr, I think, is going to win the Norris Trophy.
But yeah,
but you're right. He's gone from being a player that you were thinking, I wonder how good this kid can be, to, we better sign this guy now because his contract's up, and I think they'll probably get him on one of those bridge contracts. Like they do so many players before they, and they go whole hog on a contract? No, not that saying. Maybe Ken Holland is looking at it, says he's definitely a keeper. So we're going to try to sign him for 5-6 years at $4 million a year or something like that and get him locked in at four if he's going to be a top four defenseman on our team. And for years, the order has been saying, geez, I wish we had an offensive right shot defenseman. And the feeling has always been, well, we'll just wait for Bouchard. Well, now they've got one in Bear, who is not your prototypical, I guess, 50, 60-point defenseman yet, but he has the ability to move the puck and score. He's got four goals. So, you know, he's got four goals after a third of the season. Maybe he's a 12 to 15 goal scorer. So that's very, a very out of left field situation for the Oilers with Ethan Bear. And in Caleb Jones's case, I think he's played quite well since he's been called up. One off night in Los Angeles where everybody played poorly, but for the most part, he's looked good too. And when Matt Benning comes back from his concussion protocol, then that's going to give the Oilers eight defensemen. And I would presume that Brandon Manning then would go on waivers to go down to the minors. And then they have to decide if Benning sits or Jones sits. I don't think they want Jones sitting all that long. But they got too many defensemen on the minor league team now, too, since they sent Person down there. So, but their defense is the least of their worries right now. It's played very well, and they seem to have settled into roles. Certainly with Nurse and Bear. Oscar Klefbom seems to be the mentor for whoever the Oilers want to put on his, whether it's Person or Jones. On his right side. And right now, Adam Larson's playing the third pair. And he looks like the kind of player that's missed far too much time. He was ready to play when the season started, but then he missed a month of the season. Now he's trying to play catch-up. And they got him really playing where he should play in the third pairing with Chris Russell.
And what a difference a year makes. You know, I'll go back to Klefbom. You hear the word Norris Trophy. And in the same sentence as Klefbom, you know, potential, you know, number one defenseman in the league. I mean, he's leading the league right now in average time on ice. He plays 25, almost 26 minutes a game on average. But, you know, before the season started, if anything, the consensus was the Oilers don't have their bona fide number one defenseman. Like Klefbom was not seen as in the league of anybody who would even be close to being a Norris Trophy candidate. Mind you, you just never know. I mean, last year at the beginning of the season, would have anybody have even guessed Mark Giordano would have been a Norris Trophy candidate? Probably not, but that's for completely different reasons.
Well, I still don't think he's a Norris Trophy candidate. He's, I think he is. I know some people are saying that. Saw Brian Burke say that. I don't think he's a Norris Trophy candidate yet. But he has proven to be one of those defensemen that now he's kind of on the fence as an, you know, you can list the true number one defenseman in the NHL and you have a tough time getting past about 12, I think, out of 31
that
games.
That many.
And, you know, if he's going to play that many minutes and he's on the first power play and he also kills penalties, there's a lot of defensemen don't do all three. And John Carlson, I would think right now is the leading candidate to be the win the Norris with all the points he's putting up. But last week, you know, Oscar had played 80 minutes shorthanded and Carlson only played 40. And Carlson had played 100 minutes on the power play and Oscar had played about 85. So there's a major difference in shorthanded and how important minutes you take from playing shorthanded. Plus it tires you out more than playing on the power play. So he's in the running for sure. And I think he's proven at this point that he's over that hump of, well, with most defense. Well, let's see how he is at a certain number of games and stuff. Well, I think he's past that now. I think Oscar is, we pretty much know what Oscar is. Good skater, good enough to stop a cycle in the corner, good enough to skate the puck out of trouble, good enough to pass it out of trouble, can play the point on the power play. You'd like him to score more than he does for the shots he takes, But on the other hand, he seems to distribute it to the right people on the power play. You know, I guess it's obvious you want to get it to McDavid or Dreisaitl, but he reads them and gets them the puck and such like that. So yeah, that is a huge bonus if you have one defenseman on your roster that you can play in all situations, and it makes it a heck of a lot easier for the coach to say, okay, I can play this guy against third line, or I can play him against the other team's better players, and we're just fine.
Now, the defense, as you've identified, being the least of the Oilers' worries at this point, you know, identifying what this team needs, you know, obviously they're near the top of the league right now in the standings, playing terrifically for the most part, but they do need something. They do need one or two pieces up front. And the trade deadline is, oh my goodness, it's only 3 months away. Uh-huh. But since the beginning of the year,
it's another 30 games or so. More than that, 35 to 40 games away. Usually there's 20 games left, usually when you trade, trading deadline comes. So.
I mean, last week's topic for the podcast was, what if Taylor Hall was available and the Oilers got him? But
he's never coming to the Oilers.
Yeah, that speaks to the Oilers. Of course, would you want to add another top six forward to the mix? I think you do. As well as something in the bottom six.
You need a third line right shot center, better than Gaetan Haas, and not taking anything away from Haas, who looks like he's got the speed that they require. He looks like he has the ability to make a play. He does not have the ability, however, to win a faceoff. He's 39% right shot center, only winning 39%. You need better than that. And that part of that is because centers in the big surface in Europe, it's not so big a deal. You lose a faceoff defensively in the NHL, and before you know it, the puck's in the net. So they need that. I don't know a second line right left wing if you're going to play Neil on right wing with Nugent Hopkins as the second line. I think they could use one whole line, a good whole second line, to go with their first line, so that on a night when the first line is being, especially in the playoffs, if they make the playoffs, they're being checked to death, then the second line can help out 5-on-5. Now, what you give up for that? All these players are looking at are rentals. The Oilers aren't trading a first round draft pick. Now, I'm sure that's what Ottawa will be looking for Pageau, because he's the flavor of the day. He looks like a guy who's going to score 20 goals. He can skate. He's only like 27 years old. He shoots right. But what do you give up for that, for a rental that you can't necessarily sign? And I think the Oilers would give up a second round draft choice. I think they would give up one of their younger defensemen, because that's where their strength is. Would they include Puljujärvi in a deal? Maybe. But then the team trading isn't going to get Puljujärvi till next year. So I don't know if that makes a lot of sense. Right now, I think there's a better chance Puljujärvi gets traded at the draft or somebody else's failed first-round pick. But I think Ken Holland is kind of caught. His players are going to look at him at the end of February and say, okay, you got to help us out here. We need two pieces here. And if he does nothing, because he's a general manager looking at the future, then his team's going to say, well, what about the present? We got a pretty good team now. We need something to help us. Now, that said, I remember the Oilers a couple of years ago when they had such a good team and they only had a David Desharnais at the trading deadline. On the other hand, he scored a big goal against San Jose, I think, in overtime to help him out. So, or maybe it was like Anaheim, I can't remember, but he did help him. So I don't know what the situation is in terms of what he can get and what he has to give up, but it's a situation where he's kind of caught. If they're still the best team in the Western Conference at the end of February and he knows he needs a couple of pieces, he's got to look at the younger players on his roster who are in the minors or prospects and say, you know, and draft picks, I got to do something here. And he probably will.
I kind of wonder, I mean, you know, I think about, yeah, the obvious trading chips would come from your defense, you know, a young prospect. But would it be somebody like Caleb Jones? Or heaven forbid, I don't think Ethan Bear would be on the table, all depending what's coming back.
Ethan Bear would not be on the table.
No.
Caleb Jones might be on the table. I think William Lagesson, who's playing in the minors, would be probably the one defenseman that teams would look at and say, yeah, we wouldn't mind him in some sort of deal, young defenseman.
Because Matt Benning's not going to bring you back that top six forward.
Well, and why would you want to trade? If you got a good team, you wouldn't want to trade an NHL player either.
No. Got to give to get to give.
I think they feel that they've got enough defensemen, and if Manning's your seventh or Manning's your eighth, and that's an experienced NHL defenseman, you don't necessarily need another defenseman. I think their holes are at forward, and yet they do score lots of goals, but they still, you know, I think it would be easier to find a second line winger to play with Nugent Hopkins and Nealon to find a third line right shot center that every team's looking for is third line right shot center. And they did have one, of course, and Ryan Strome, who's point of game player for the Rangers right now. And they wasn't one of Peter Shirelli's better moves for Ryan Spooner, but that's all, I guess, water under the bridge now. So they're still looking for that third line center and they had one.
I do wonder what, you know, the change. I mean, Dave Tippett coming in, the change on defense. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of good things happening to the Oilers this year. I mean, clearly McDavid and Draisaitl have elevated their games to the point where it's, you know, it's not even funny. These two are, you know, you have to go back to Lemieux and Jágr almost 30 years ago to find a comparable. Maybe even not that long ago, maybe 20 years ago. Dave Tippett coming in, he's a different style of coach than McClellan or Hitchcock, but obviously he's got the reputation as being a defensive-minded. His systems are defense first.
Yeah, so is Ken Hitchcock, more defensive.
Yeah. What's the difference?
Better goaltending.
Okay.
Better penalty killing than he had last year. Infinitely better penalty killing. And part of that is the goalies make the saves on the penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
But I would suggest it's mostly the penalty kill. I think their style of play is such now that they're willing to gamble to get the puck out of the ice by making a 10-foot pass into the middle of the ice, as opposed to ring it around the boards. And they've had to convince some of the defensemen that's not a play, you know, up the middle, even if it's 10 feet, 15 feet, and then another pass that gets you out of your end, as opposed to along the boards.
And is having Ethan Bear, Caleb Jones, and you know, those guys, are they more capable of those
kinds
of plays?
Well, I think Ethan Bear's shown the ability to handle a forecheck and slither his way out of it and then, you know, outweigh a forecheck or make a play.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that offensive instinct to make a play, which is certainly a benefit in the top four if you got, you know, one or two of those sort of players, because the forechecking is still really hard in the NHL. The puck just spends less time in the Oilers' end now. They seem to be able to break it out cleaner. And the goalies aren't seeing the 10-bell, you know, killer chances from the opposing team that perhaps they saw for last couple of years, where not too many goalies were going to make those saves, whether your name was Talbot or Koskinen or Carey Price or, you know, Vasilevsky or whoever else you want to name. They weren't making those saves either. So they're giving up the chances. They still give up, I think, a few too many shots for me. But the shots aren't from the areas that teams are going to score goals on.
That's the Oil Spills podcast for today. You can subscribe to Oil Spills via Apple's podcast app, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you may access your podcasts.